From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Today was the deadline for about 200 homeless people to move out from a park in front of New Orleans City Hall. Last week, we told you the story of one of them, a man named Chris Turnbow. He'd lost his home in Hurricane Katrina. And when we met Turnbow, he was about to get his own apartment.
Oh, I'm like an old hippie. I don't care if it's just bean bags, you know, and a waterbed. To me, home is a feeling. It's more than furniture and whatnot.
Those words thrilled members of Chris Turnbow's family. Until our story on All Things Considered, they hadn't seen him or heard from him in years. NPR's Joseph Shapiro did the original story, and he joined Chris Turnbow's mother and son as they drove to New Orleans to try to find him.
I'm Jean Aaron. I'm Chris's mom.
My name's David Turnbow, and I'm Chris's son.
I think I just want to hold him and know that he's okay and see his face.
About the same. I just want to give him a hug and let him know that his son hadn't forgot about him and that, you know, that I've been missing him and that we come all this way to find him.
It was 5 years ago when Chris Turnbow left home in Marion, Arkansas, and just disappeared. There'd been one sighting of Chris. A family friend bumped into him at Mardi Gras. But that was before Hurricane Katrina, and Chris's mother tried not to think his long silence meant he was alive or dead.
I have been so scared since Katrina came, not really knowing anything about what had happened to him and having the very worst thoughts sometimes, and then I'd try to be positive about it and know that someday I'd see him again.
Jean Aaron did feel positive when she heard her son's voice on the radio. That's why she and her grandson have picked me up in their car. They're on the way to New Orleans, and they want to find Chris.
How long is this drive, you figure? You counted the miles, right?
390 miles.
It won't be easy to find him. Last week, outreach workers moved Chris into an apartment. He stayed two nights, then hit the streets again. That's not unusual for someone who's been homeless. There's a lot of stimulation when you're living on the streets. It can be strange to suddenly move inside, especially into a room with no television or radio. It might have been wiser for Jean to turn the car around and to hold off on this trip until Chris settled back into the apartment, until she could talk to him on the phone, until he knew she was coming. But she's his mother. She wasn't going to wait.
Let's go.
All right.
Last leg.
Yep. Let's go find old man Chris.
Jean Aaron learned a few things when she heard the radio story. That her son had a home before Katrina. He did carpentry and other construction, but his truck and tools were stolen during the storm. Recently, he's been sick. He had part of his intestine removed. Now he's on the streets trying to keep a colostomy bag clean. He needs another operation to reconnect his colon. She also found out that her son, who's 52, is known on the streets as Old Man Chris, because he's got a white beard.
Sounds strange to me to hear that little boy that I raised be called Old Man Chris.
Chris had been gone before for weeks, even months at a time. David, who's 36 now, says he tried not to be angry and to understand that's just the way his father was.
Yeah, I was about 14. I think he might have been, you know, gone for maybe a year. And just out in the world, as he calls, being kind of lost out in the world. And, you know, he wasn't homeless back then or nothing, but just a rambler. I just got a phone call one day, and I happened to answer the phone, and he said, "Hey, son." I'm like, "Dad?" You know? "Well, I'm in Wisconsin." I'm like, "How?" You leave and wind up in Wisconsin. And I mean, if he leaves, he's liable to call you from anywhere.
Headed to New Orleans, David describes their mood as festive. They tell loving stories. They're excited to think they may get to see Chris, touch him and hold him before the end of the evening. But as they reach New Orleans, all that optimism is about to get tested.
"We'll just go here and make a left, and it'll take us straight back over the bridge." He said, "But when you get off there, you'll go through one light, and on your second light, make a left, and then you go through two lights, and you make a right."
They head straight to Duncan Plaza. That's the park across from City Hall where homeless people sleep in dozens of tents. The park is a nagging symbol of how the city's homeless population has doubled since Hurricane Katrina. Now there's a fence going up around the park. The homeless here are about to be forced out. Jean and David go to the wall where Chris had slept on a scrap of carpet, alongside other homeless men and women.
I'm trying to find my daddy, old man Chris. I know he'd been sleeping over here and...
Chris isn't here. But now they see, smell, and touch the brutal life of homeless people like Chris. Blankets are piled up like trash. There's a biting smell of urine. Figures emerge from the shadows.
Man, I just never seen so much poverty.
Back in the car, David drives the dark streets downtown and through the French Quarter. His eyes sweep the streets, searching for his father. He watches shadows more carefully than he watches the traffic. When he almost hits a parked car, David and his grandmother ask me to drive. I turn off the tape recorder. It's just a short time later, driving down Canal Street, when David yells to me to pull over. Before I can park, he's leaped out of the car. He spotted a man with white hair, face down, on the sidewalk. When David comes back, he looks like he's seen a ghost.
I just jumped out and ran down there. His face was kind of buried in the car. He looked dead to me, even standing right up next to him. But I ran over there, and, you know, people were just walking, and they were just stepping right over him, you know, like going about their merry business and just stepping over him like he was just a lump in the road. You know, I just got down on one knee, and even looking at his face, I just could not tell if it was Dad or not.
Then David checked for some familiar tattoos.
But, you know, I got to looking at his hands and his arms, and, I didn't see any of the tattoos or nothing, and his hands were too small, you know, to be Dad's hands, and I knew it wasn't him.
They call it a night. They've been in the car for 10 hours. They haven't even stopped to eat. It's time to quit looking. The next morning, Gene Aaron and David Turnbow get up early and head back to Duncan Plaza. It's lively in the daylight, with the scores of homeless people camped out here, the volunteers who feed them, and the preachers who minister to them.
The God in you, my brother. You keep living for God, not for man. Because God will not leave you, not fail you, not forsake you. But man will. Trust him.
Nobody here seems to know Chris, but everybody knows exactly where to find him.
So if he's not here, he's basically in a mid-city resident. The location is on Reed.
Jackson Square. I saw him that way early this morning. He should be there now.
He went that way, but he said he was coming back, and he was coming to sit in the park over here.
He's looked for a young lady by the name, little short little person called Mama Rose. He hangs around Mama Rose and them quite often.
They follow these leads. Each one is a dead end. After hours of searching, they head back to Duncan Plaza. It's noon when volunteer groups show up with lunch. David pulls his grandmother's Dodge to the curb.
Dad! There he is. Dad!
It's Chris, sitting on the wall, his beard bright white in the sun, his dark eyes wide open in surprise. Chris hurries across the street with a limp.
Oh, I love you. Dad. Love you. Oh, man. Dad. What are y'all doing here?
We've looked hard and hard and hard for you.
Y'all heard my interview.
Can you believe that? That's
man,
a million to one
I
shot, Daddy.
So bad.
It's a Christmas miracle, Dad. We love you.
Look, guys.
I know, honey. I know. It's okay. It's okay, though. We got you. That's all that matters.
My son. This is my son. Oh, my God. So many people heard this interview. I was hoping y'all would hear it.
Who heard it? Brenda heard it. Brenda heard it and called Brandy. And then we listened to it on the computer.
Then Chris, still holding on to his mother and son, shouts to the people on the street.
Hey! This is my son and my mother. They come from Arkansas and found me.
There's a lot of catching up to do. Who's sick? Who's died? How much David's kids have grown? 3 new granddaughters have been born. Then Chris says what his mother and son hope to hear. He wants to go back home with them to Arkansas. He's wanted to do that for a long time, but pride got in his way.
I don't want to come home with nothing, and y'all think the only reason I come home is because I needed y'all.
That's when you're supposed to come home.
I want y'all to know I come home because I wanted to be with y'all, and I missed y'all. I didn't want y'all to think
you didn't know how much was missing you, did you? Did you know?
that we were all missing you?
They're ready to jump in the car and go. But first, they drive by Chris's tiny apartment to get his things. There's furniture that's still stacked in the living room, clothes that never got out of his backpack. By an air mattress on the floor, there's a can of syrupy pineapple, left half-eaten, the tin top open. Seamus Roan comes to say goodbye.
Oh, it's a good day.
I got a hug you.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure to meet you.
Good to see you, man. Good to see you.
Roan is an outreach worker with Unity of Greater New Orleans. He worked for 2 months to get Chris off the streets. Chris wants to explain something unexpected about this woman he calls his mother. She's really his sister.
When I was born, a couple of months after I was born, my mother died.
3 weeks, honey.
3 weeks of brain tumor. And this is my sister.
Okay.
She took me and left the farm in Arkansas and went to Memphis. What were you, 16?
16.
And met my brother-in-law. He's been deceased about 5, 6 years now. And they took me and raised me as their own. You know, this is mom.
But you were always loved, and what you need to know now and what you needed to know then was that when mom died, she was 36 years old. She had one thing to give, and that was you, and she gave you to me before she died. That was the last thing she said. My aunt asked her, who do you want to have the baby? And she said, I want Jean to have him. So, buddy, you're still mine. Because mom said so.
Then Chris Turnbow fills the tub in his little apartment. He takes a quick bath, grabs his few possessions, and locks the door to the place that was his for less than 1 week. He opens the back door of his mother's car. His son gets behind the wheel. They leave New Orleans and drive 8 hours straight back to Arkansas and home. Joseph Shapiro, NPR News.
You can hear the original story that launched Jean Aaron's search for her son, Chris, and a picture of the family. You can see that, too, at npr.org.